40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. Disturbing videos released showing Tyre Nichols beaten by Memphis police.
I'm just trying to go home. Lay
down. Man, if you don't lay down.
Oh, I am on the ground.
Put your hand on your stomach.
President Biden urged those seeking justice to protest peacefully.
I think what happened is absolutely awful, and it's a result of the system that exists today.
Nichols died days after the beating. The police officers were fired and also charged with murder. Former Judge Lodoris Cordell.
This is not about five or eight bad apples. This is about a bad orchard. We're talking about the culture of policing in America. These officers wanted revenge after Mr. Nichols was able to run away from them. And when they caught him, this was a beatdown. And they did it with cameras on because the culture was such that they knew that they wouldn't be in trouble.
Another shooting near Jerusalem this morning. BBC correspondent Sebastian Usher.
The two people who've been shot are said to be in serious condition. Israeli media said they were father and son. The police say the assailant has been neutralized without giving further details on his condition.
Yesterday, a Palestinian gunman killed seven people near a synagogue. We're now hearing from the suspect in the mass shooting in Half Moon Bay, California. Here's KCBS reporter Matt Bigler.
In a jailhouse interview, Chun-Li Zhao admits to killing seven people on Monday. Speaking with KNTV, Zhao says he endured years of bullying, was forced to work long hours on the mushroom farms, and his complaints were ignored by supervisors.
We're now getting a look at the violent hammer attack on former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband. Here's our Tom Foti.
Video recordings from surveillance cameras and police body cams show Paul Pelosi opening the door, struggling with the suspect, David DePape, as he violently hits Pelosi on the head with a hammer and arriving police. DePape said he was looking for Pelosi's wife, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
A New Jersey man who admitted to pepper spraying Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick during the insurrection was sentenced yesterday to 80 months in prison. WUSA reporter Jordan Fisher.
This is even longer than many of the other assault sentences we've seen. And part of that is because Julian Cater was accused of assaulting at least three different officers, although he will receive credit for the 2 years that he's already served.
At the Australian Open today.
In a tight three-setter full of drama, emotion and leads that seesawed, Aryna Sabalenka has downed Elena Rybakina 4-6, 6-3, 6-4. And she may be the runner-up, but Rybakina now moves to the top 10 world rankings.
It was a thrilling and dramatic match. That's CBS's Scott Maiman in Canberra, Australia. And this is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The long-term effects of Wisconsin's redistricting process were apparent in the November elections. A nonpartisan good government group says voters who feel overlooked should not give up. Mike Moen reports.
Democratic Governor Tony Evers won re-election, but Republicans maintained strong control over the legislature. Jay Heck of the group Common Cause points out that Evers maintains his veto power, but he says Republicans still carry a lot of weight, partly because they keep redrawing the maps to their advantage.
There were more votes cast for Democratic candidates statewide than Republican. But the contrast with the legislative elections in the state is so sharp, it almost makes laughable the idea that we have a true representative democracy.
Researchers have said that over the past decade, Wisconsin has produced among the most gerrymandered voting district maps in the country. Heck says voters should look ahead to next year's state Supreme Court election with the hope a less politicized court could eventually revisit the issue. And there could be legislation floated again next year to develop an independent redistricting process. In the meantime, he says the current maps allow a smaller percentage of voters to decide who controls the legislature, leaving other voters behind in fair representation.
Urban areas in Wisconsin have suffered a decline in the shared revenue from the state, even though those people pay taxes.
Heck says that means less support for schools, roads, and other public needs. Analysts say lawmakers representing these areas get packed into boundaries that ultimately diminish their voices at the state capitol. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, the loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Morning Cannolis with James Santelli.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning and welcome to our second hour here, our weekly review of the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for spending some time with me and my producer. Together with Calvin, I'm taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789 here in the studios of WAUK Radio, but in the broadcast areas of Civic Media statewide. Call in, talk about these things that are important to America. We spent our entire first hour talking about the major news that all America is focusing on this past week, the horrific, terrible, unconstitutional murder. The death of Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black man, at the hands of five police officers in Memphis, Tennessee. Talking about what happened, what we know to this point, what we don't know to this point, certainly more investigative work to be done. But those five officers already charged in the state courts, likely the federal government, the United States Department of Justice, to be reviewing this both for criminal possibilities of prosecution, a violation of constitutional rights, but also arguably pattern or practice investigation, attempt to determine whether or not what happened to Tyree Nichols is a part of a larger systemic problem that needs to be addressed, advocating in our first hour that you get involved not only to promote the passage of the George Floyd Policing Act of 2020, presumably now of 2023 in this new Congress, but also supporting the local, the county, the state, the federal training that has to continue, not only about the nuts and bolts of law enforcement, but also about why it is that we have police officers, which is to provide service, and to ensure that every single one of them appreciates the importance of the role that they play, not only in supporting the Constitution, but ensuring that people are protected, that yes, indeed, we respond as cops, as police officers, as investigators, to those instances of criminal behavior to keep us all safe and secure. But those reactions, those responses are always commensurate with the level of the conduct and never anything more than that. Plainly not happening here, the loss of life of Tyree Nichols earlier this month at the hands of law enforcement officers who violated their oath and who are now going to be facing the consequences of that, deterring them and hopefully deterring others out there who might think that this kind of behavior is somehow within their ambit, within their duties and responsibilities, just the opposite as law enforcement officers. We have got some great callers online. Let's go in this first hour, these first segments, these first moments of our second hour to some of our callers calling in already. Joe from Madison, glad to have you with us again this morning, Joe. Appreciate your comment, your question, your thought, or your perspective.
It's a great topic, and I appreciate the detail and also your suggestions of what could be done to help ameliorate this situation just by the average citizen. Thanks a lot, Jim. That's really important.
Absolutely.
Two questions I would have. You were talking about the legislation, the George Floyd titled legislation, and in indicating that that had faltered at the it passed in the House last, but faltered in the Senate. Do you know? Just two questions for you. First, this is the first one. You said that does this bill then have to be reintroduced in the House and pass a Republican current Republican majority in the House in order to get back onto the floor in the Senate? Do you know that? And then the second question I would have, I would like to hear your comments, particularly because you indicated the amount of involvement you had had with police training. One of the things I find interesting is that other countries, not only is it not defunding the police that they engage in, it's actually more funding of police work than we have on our own. There was a study that was done by a group called the International Criminal Justice Training Reform, and they made the point that they looked at 100 different countries and that in many of them they have much stronger training time or longer training time. We have an average of about 21 weeks before our training officers are allowed to go on patrol. There are other countries, and I'd love to hear what your reaction is to this, where they actually have police universities. It is a university degree that you get, and your training may be as high as 3 years before you can apply to be a police officer. So I'll hang up and listen to your responses, but I'd be very curious to hear your thoughts on that notion, too. Thanks a lot.
Great, Joe. As always, thoughtful questions, comments. I am going to respond to both of those. The first one, an easy response, because we know what the process is here. Every single time a Congress goes out of business, the 117th Congress went out of business in December 31st of 2022. We've got this new Congress finally sworn in earlier this month. And yes, every piece of legislation has to be reintroduced. And so if legislation was not passed in a previous Congress, it doesn't automatically click over and become a part of the agenda for the new Congress. So yes, indeed, we need to have the reintroduction of something akin to the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act of 2020. And again, what will happen is it's reintroduced, certain to be reintroduced, arguably now with the name of Tyre Nichols attached to it as well. We've seen that happen from time to time as well, certainly in his memory, assigned to committees in both the House and the Senate. And Joe, you raised the all-important issue. We have got a different composition now of the United States House of Representatives. In the House of Representatives, as we know, you need a simple majority. Will there be enough Republicans? You would certainly anticipate that, more than just hope for that, that anyone looking at this, regardless of partisan perspectives, would vote for something like this to ensure that our safety and security and the safety and security of the future, Tyre Nichols and George Floyd's, is preserved. But yes, indeed, you've got to get the majority in the House. And yes, you still need to get the supermajority because of the filibuster in the Senate. You need to have that supermajority of 60 people. And so there are challenges right now. That's the reason why in the previous Congress it failed, could not get those numbers of people in the Senate. This is the advocacy to reach out, another opportunity to get to your congressman, get to your congresswomen, get to the senators, and tell them you want this to happen. Because not only of the Tyre Nichols of the world, because of your own community. Second point, Joe, also incredibly important. Advocacy of your local law enforcement officers to be trained and trained and trained. Undeniably, the training, perhaps that you will not be surprised to hear, that we engaged in was, I would like to believe, quality training. It is focused. We spend a lot of time talking about what the language of the Constitution means, what excessive force means, what due process means, what life and liberty means, and what the specific implications of that are for actions on the street. And we do that academically, and then it's also done in a sort of physical training as well, in the kinds of things that happen in training academies. Joe, I could not agree more. One of my small frustrations, even in doing that important work, is never enough time. And it's not just because Jim Santel talks a lot, which he does, but nonetheless, just because we can always great questions, especially from the new law enforcement officers, but also by those who are continuing, who need that continuing education, whether you've been there for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, never enough time to do everything, to talk about all the variations, to talk about the new interpretations of the Fourth Amendment, of the Eighth Amendment, interpreted by our courts, and then ensuring that not only the officers appreciate that, but it stays with them. The kinds of things, Joe, that you indicated that happen in other countries where it is a degree that you get in the same way that you get an engineering degree, other those kinds of things, Absolutely. This is important, right? This is critically important. And so, again, the advocacy, something that you can do on behalf of Tyre Nichols and his family as we mourn with them, is to promote that kind of very, very extensive training and continued training, not just during the police academies, not just in the entry-level instruction that takes place in every law enforcement entity across the country, but continuing and focusing on changes as the country changes, and that you cannot have enough training for all of our law enforcement officers. A model that Joe identified overseas, again, the International Justice Training Institute, that those kinds of things, advocating for that, cannot support that enough. And again, the horrific story of just this past week supports that as well. We also have a Rico calling in from Rock County. Rico, your comments, your questions, your perspectives this morning on our broadcast. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, hi, Jim. We all like listening to you talk. Your excellent reporting and commentary on these things is great.
Thanks, Rico.
You said something earlier about the Tyree case, and it just stopped me dead in my tracks, Jim. I want to make sure I heard you correctly on this. Are you telling me that medical, because the first time I've heard it, medical personnel arrived on the scene and then waited 16 minutes to administer any kind of medical attention to Tyree Nichols?
Is that
what you were?
Right.
Jim, that just adds, these guys train and professionally, they operate on the sheer premise that not only minutes, maybe seconds could mean the difference between life and death. And how somebody, 16 minutes, what, did they think he was dead already? That's the only way I could wrap my head around that, Jim.
Right. And again, you don't see that in the videos, Rico, but all the reporting is that, again, coming out of this, again, as you indicated, it is horrifying, all of this. Medics arriving on the scene, 16 minutes. That is going to be the focus of an awful lot of this investigation. And that's why not only the perpetrators of this particular event, but those who did not act in a responsible, timely fashion, they can also be exposed to criminal liability, right? Because they didn't act. And so your point, your amazement in this, what again is initial reporting, and again, eventually the medics do take him to the hospital, but even that happens an hour after that initial traffic stop that the video seems to suggest. Will that be the focus, Rico, of this investigation? You bet it will be. And that's why likely that other names will come forward of people who should have acted more. As I indicated, we've got these other two deputy sheriffs, likewise terminated from their employment, suspended. We don't know exactly what their involvement was or non-involvement. But that, too, can be the focus of not only a state prosecution, but also federal as well. As more and more details of the sort that Rico underscores this morning come out, we will find out more about this ultimately in court, at sentencing hearings, and even before that in trials, if indeed these individuals decide to go to trial, which is their right. Rico, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it this morning. Dick from Madison, you're also calling in, presumably to chat about this major story in American history and the currency of our lives. And Dick,
we actually have 40 seconds left, Jim, so I think we should not take this caller until after the break.
All right, let's do just that. Well, will Dick stay on the line? We'll take that right after the good break coming up here, and then move on to some other stories also animating our American experience here in 2023. Stay with us for that. Stay with us for Dick's call as well from Madison right after this coming brief break.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis.
every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A winter weather advisory continues until 3 a.m. early tomorrow morning. Cloudy this afternoon with snow showers likely. High of 21, winds out of the northeast, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Overcast tonight, snow showers likely, lows around 15. Chance for snow showers tomorrow, high of 20. 4 to 8 inches of snow today through tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 16 degrees.
WAUK.
We are back on this Saturday morning. Thank you so much for all of our wonderful callers to this point, and also yet another caller on the line as we talk about the continuing tragedy of Memphis, Tennessee, the death of Tyre Nichols at the hands of 5 law enforcement officers, and as we talk right before the break, perhaps others who failed to act in a timely fashion. Dick, thanks so much for staying with me over the break. Your comment, your question about this or other issues.
Well, justice in general, I'm going to go to after commenting a little bit on that situation in Memphis. I'd also heard that 2 of the 5 officers weren't on active, they weren't on duty, for crying out loud. I mean, does that speak to the culture of maybe something's wrong there?
Right. And Dick, just, right, to that point, I had not heard that myself, but that will certainly be a part of the investigation. That goes, once again, to the kinds of things a Department of Justice can look at and determine, gee, what is the authority that these folks had to engage, even in the moments? That's the kind of pattern of practice, the overall review, that systemic analysis that can, in fact, follow. As those kinds of facts come out, this kinds of things that should be a part of our focus. So good first point, Dick. Thanks so much for that. Further things you wanted identify here?
Yeah, just justice in general this past week, again, not to beat this into the ground, but we see these members of the Oath Keepers, indicted and all this stuff. How can you have true justice if in this country you have 2 sets of how the laws are implemented? The rich and powerful seem to, in other words, with that case, I'm sorry, but Trump and his minions orchestrated the whole thing, and they're out.
And
I just don't get it.
Right. And others, and Dick could not be more timely, because that is the next item on our syllabus. So not only appreciate the substance of the call, but also getting us into just that, because that is the next thing we wanted to chat about this morning. We've got just not one, not two, not three, but 4 stories related to January 6th and the kinds of things that Dick has identified here as well. He just talked about one of them. 4 Oath Keepers, one of these nationalist white supremacist groups, on trial for actions of theirs tied to the January 6th investigation, found guilty just this past week in federal district court in the District of Columbia for their actions, their plots, their conspiracy, their seditious conspiracy to halt, as we know, the peaceful transfer of power from former President Donald Trump to Joe Biden. We know previously that Stuart Rhodes and one of his top deputies named Kelly Meigs and others were previously found guilty of seditious conspiracy. Some other Oath Keepers were acquitted of that charge, but found guilty of some other charges. That in a previous trial this past week. Again, all these trials going on in the trial courts in the District of Columbia. Others now found guilty of seditious conspiracy. And again, as we've talked before, what is seditious conspiracy? Why is this story important? The question we always ask. Legally, seditious conspiracy occurs when 2 or more people conspire to, yes, that's right, overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the United States government, or bring war against it, or plot to use force to oppose the authority of the United States government. That's what seditious conspiracy is. And as we have spoken before, the significance of these latest convictions this past week, they haven't been sentenced yet. Others will be sentenced down the road. But the significance of these convictions is that you have private individuals coming in, doing their public service, doing their government service, serving as jurors, listening to the evidence and saying, no, this wasn't just political discourse. This was an attempt to overthrow the government, to bring war to it, and we make that finding beyond a reasonable doubt unanimously. That is why this is so, so very, very significant. Penalties that go along, again, will be a part of the sentencing, each one of them, each offense conduct carries a 20-year prison sentence along with a maximum fine of $20,000. So this continues this prosecutions of the Oath Keepers. We know that the prosecutions of the Proud Boys, that's another trial in another courtroom. That one is also continuing. And we know that there are more trials coming up, not only of these people at more than a mid-level, people who called folks to Washington, D.C., orchestrated this, plainly had small arsenals ready to go to overthrow the government. We know all that happened. We know as well that there are about 1,000 other people who were also on the ground that day prosecuted. One of those, again, this past week, was responsible in directly for the death of Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick. You recall his name well. He was one of the many brave officers who responded to the assault on the Capitol on January 6th, horrifically beaten, and during the onslaught that happened, suffered some major injuries. The following day, Brian Sicknick died. Now, there's medical authority that is somewhat difficult to get one's head around that indicates that this otherwise young and healthy person, that death was not related to the beating. The judge commented about that this past week in imposing a sentence on this latest defendant. His name is Julian Cotter, K-H-A-T-E-R, who admitted spraying Sicknick and another officer with a chemical irritant. He was sentenced this past week to 80 months in prison. 80 months in prison, given him credit for time served, about 22 months or so. A co-defendant, George Tenios, also involved in this attack upon Brian Sicknick, that ultimately, if not medically, led to the death of Brian Sicknick, who brought the spray and handed it to Cater, also sentenced to time served in this proceeding. Judge Thomas Hogan, who is the judge who presided over this sentencing this past week, said this. He told Cater, people can conclude in their own minds that the spray may have caused Sicknick's death. And I think an awful lot of us do. Plainly, my comments this morning suggest that there has got to be some connection, even if there's not the medical expert advice to show the line between one and the other. But he goes on to say this, I am concerned about what you do, regardless of if you're responsible directly for the death of Officer Sicknick, of what you did do, the judge said. I don't find any excuse for anyone attacking an officer, particularly in this situation, doing their duty facing overwhelming odds. Those are the words of Judge Thomas Hogan in imposing sentence on Julius Cotter this past week. The government had argued for a 90-month sentence, accusing him of cowardly and also a premeditated assault on the police. The judge saying, of course, that he does not agree with that, giving him an 80-month sentence. That happening just this past week in connection with the enforcement of the law related to January 6th. Right after our next break, a couple more pieces of information coming up out of the January 6th matter in the courts and in the laws of our nation. Stay with us for that upcoming discussion.
CBS News special report, a day after horrific video was released of police viciously beating Tyre Nichols at a traffic stop in Memphis, this Philadelphia protester hopes it helps.
I think without the video, it's very hard to beat these kinds of cases in order for the family to get justice.
Nichols screamed for his mother during the attack, and she is heartbroken.
For a mother to know that their child was calling them in their need and I wasn't there for him? Do you know how I feel right now?
The family's lawyer, Ben Crump, says this shows that officers in many cities think they have impunity.
It is the culture that allows them to think they can do this to Tyree, that they can do this to Kenan Anderson in Los Angeles, California, that they can do it to Byron Williams in Las Vegas.
The protests last night were mostly peaceful, but sad. CBS News Special Report. I'm Allison Keyes.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Most reminded of Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Most reminded of Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
What is dedication?
My daughter started making necklaces. She makes what we call affirmation fashion. I tell her every day that your black is beautiful. Your black is beautiful. And if there's anything better than being beautiful, it's being smart. And if there's anything better than being smart, it's being kind. And reaffirming that every day is our method of making sure her chin never drops. My dad wasn't around, and I remember riding a bike and falling off and cutting myself, and me never would just want to get back on it. People ask, how your children learn how to ride a bike, and you didn't. I didn't teach them. I just created an environment where they taught themselves, and all I had to do was be there.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the
And we are back for our final half hour, our final segments here on Morning Cannolis, talking principally, but not exclusively, about the terrible, brutal death of Tyree Nichols in Memphis, Tennessee. Appreciate all your comments. We're always taking your calls, your perspectives, your thoughts at 844-967 here on the studios, the broadcast of Civic Media. Right before the break, we were chatting in response to Dick's good call about what he perceived to be, and I think many of us perceived to be, some inequities when it comes to the administration of justice in America, talking specifically about a couple of recent events in the January 6th matter, the continued prosecutions of cases, including the convictions this past week of some of the Oath Keepers, the sentencing to 80 months of one of the principal perpetrators of the violence of January 6th, a couple of other stories also related to January 6th. We have talked a lot in the past about the January 6th Special Committee, now out of business in the 117th Congress, that we've got the 118th Congress. Before that committee went out of business, it issued subpoenas. One of those was to Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon chose not to appear at all, ultimately referred for prosecution to the United States Department of Justice, tried, convicted, and sentenced. Now that case on appeal for what? For contempt of Congress, failing to appear at all. There was a second referral made by the House Committee and by the House of Representatives generally to the Department of Justice, and that was for a fellow named Peter Navarro. He was basically the trade representative, the trade official, the trade advisor, a strategist in the Trump White House. And likewise, he refused to do anything in response to the subpoenas for documents and for his testimony issued by the United States Congress. And so also referred and also indicted on two counts of contempt of Congress. His trial delayed a number of weeks while the judge presiding over that case, Judge Mehta, postponed it to handle other seditious conspiracy trials in front of him. But we know that Peter Navarro now going to trial in the days and weeks ahead. In advance of that trial, the former president, Donald Trump, files a letter just this past week in federal court, comes less than a week or so before Navarro is scheduled to go to trial. And basically, Trump's letter articulates the position that, as one of his senior advisors, that indeed, from Trump's perspective, Navarro had an obligation to assert executive privilege on his behalf, meaning the former president's behalf, and was fully within his rights to fail to comply, to refuse to comply with the congressional subpoena issued. Principles of confidentiality, the president, former president writes in this letter, stated above what you responded to the committee's subpoena, those principles above the committee's right to have this information, writes this to the court plainly an attempt to subvert, to divert the conduct of the trial. Plainly not going to happen. Judge Mehta has previously ruled that the claimed assertion of executive privilege, which is what the Trump letter is all about, is unproven. Defendant cannot avoid prosecution for contempt, so the trial going ahead. But an attempt this past week by the former president to intrude once again, as he did in the Steve Bannon trial, with a letter that suggests that he was authorized, that is, Navarro authorized, to implicate and apply executive privilege, the judge previously having dismissed that, going ahead with the trial, once again affirming that the president, former president's position is not to be taken in the context of this trial as something that diverts it in any way. And finally, a story about January 6th, perhaps among the most important, related once again to Donald Trump, not in any way discounting the seriousness of the convictions and the sentences we've already talked about. Decisions are imminent. Decisions are imminent. Those are the words of Georgia prosecutor, a woman named Fannie Willis. She's a district attorney in Fulton County. We have spoken a lot about her in the past. She is conducting this investigation ever since Donald Trump called Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger on January 2nd, before he left office, to ask that the Secretary of State find just enough votes, 11,780, to put him ahead of Joe Biden in the electoral count in that state. Fannie Willis looking not only at whether or not that phone call, an attempt to undermine, to subvert the election process in Georgia, but also plainly having expanded her focus, not only about that, but also calling in people like White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Attorney John Eastman, who was the architect of much of the January 6th attempt to overthrow the government and to install Donald Trump for a second term, and even Senator Lindsey Graham, all these people testifying before the special grand jury that the district attorney there convened. That special grand jury concluded its investigation, we know, earlier this month. It dissolved then right after that and recommended that its findings be released publicly. And then what happened was that there was a call for that report to be released. Willis went into court this past week. She appeared before the judge. And she, from my perspective, and I suspect the perspectives of many continuing and former prosecutors, told the judge, a fellow named Robert McBurney, that she is opposed to the release of that report. That is the right thing to do at this time because she didn't want to compromise in any way, as she said, the coming prosecutions. She described them as imminent, coming up soon for future defendants. And that's the appropriate thing to do. You don't want at this point a compromise in any way the results of this special grand jury until she can, as Georgia law contemplates, present this to an indicting grand jury, which is also a part of their process. all of the indications, again, these statements made by Fannie Willis to the judge determining whether or not this report should be released publicly. She is saying, no, let me make my decisions as we normally do based upon the results of this special grand jury investigation. Let me present this, she says, to a grand jury that can indict. Those decisions imminent. She's making reference to defendants protecting future defendants' rights. Mindful of those is what she says. Important for two reasons. One is affirming the important role of grand juries and in prosecutors doing the right thing here, not to let us see all this until the cases are charged, but also indicating the big news story coming out of this. Decisions are imminent. Difficult, if not impossible, to believe that she will not be returning indictments in this now charging grand jury that will focus on the extent to which perhaps the former president, perhaps other people were involved in attempting to overthrow the election there in Georgia. We know she's also looking at the false electors scheme, other ways of presenting evidence to legislative groups. There were hearing evidence from people like Rudy Giuliani and others. All of that, a part of her investigation. Decisions are imminent. I suspect very much that on this broadcast, on other broadcasts of civic media, on media generally, we're going to be hearing from District Attorney Fannie Willis again very soon, and also probably the judge, hopefully, agreeing with her that for now, not ultimately, but for now, those reports coming out of the special grand jury should not be released. Again, important news this past week, all related to January 6th. I have another caller, which we appreciate tremendously. Bill from Oconomowoc calling into our program this morning. Bill, thanks so much for your comment or question.
Well, thanks for giving me the airtime. How do Americans wrap their heads around people like Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz and all these people that were co-conspirators, all these people that took a vow to protect the country from domestic terrorism when they failed, and now they're investigating the FBI? That doesn't even add up to me. It's like the mafia questioning the FBI. How do Americans wrap their head around that? Hang up, and I want to hear your thoughts.
Bill, thank you so much for the comment. It is a rhetorical question, but it's an important question, right? The answer, the narrow answer, is probably it is very difficult to wrap your head around that, right? The very people who may have been engaged in some way in supporting Jim Jordan, perhaps among the top people on that list. We know that the special committee also indicated that he was one of those people who failed to respond to their own subpoena, referred Jim Jordan, and yes, indeed, the present Speaker of the House of Representatives to the Ethics Committee for their failure to respond. That behavior perhaps less significant than what you're indicating, that is their actual involvement in this. It is difficult to imagine this. And your comment also underscores something else. It's important as we continue our discussion of civics here on this broadcast. This notion that Jim Jordan, now commissioned not only to be the head of the House Judiciary Committee, but also this special committee looking at the extent to which government was weaponized against conservatives. That's the name of the special committee put together to determine, as you've just said, whether or not there was an attempt to try to use the trappings of government to go after conservative voices, conservative leaders in our government. It is, in a word, ridiculous. And also inside that, the civics point, a big push this past week and promises of more requests coming to get information from the U.S. Department of Justice about past and present and presumably even future investigations. That is the disclosure of investigative activities to the Congress, believe it or not, committees like Jim Jordan's on this weaponization theory that the Congress, this now majority House of Representatives, is asking for. It is certain that the United States Department of Justice, Bill Barr, the present Deputy Attorney General, Merrick Garland, Lisa Monaco, probably not Bill Barr, would perhaps even he would agree with this present notion that the Department of Justice, it is completely impossible to believe that we are ever going to turn over through the Department of Justice the results of continuing investigations, those things in grand jury matters, in other places, all of that does not get produced in our system of justice. This is all about separation of powers. And so early indications from the Department of Justice that they are not going to cooperate with this weaponization committee to the extent that it is asking for specific information about what is exclusively an executive function, a Department of Justice function. Merrick Garland and others, the Deputy Attorney General, are signaling to the extent that they grant requests, they get subpoenas perhaps from this committee. Those subpoenas will be responded to. The answer will be no. Those would be violative of the most fundamental principles, not only in our Constitution, but also the laws, the enacted laws, the criminal process, the procedure, which we have talked about at great length on this broadcast. Those kinds of requests, they are ridiculous. And to the point of the last caller, difficult to wrap your head around the notion that with Congress doing all the other things it's got on its agenda right now to appropriately do immigration, health care, criminal justice reform, which we've talked about this morning, is instead pursuing this event that is looking back, a series of events, looking back to determine whether or not there was a basis for past, present, pending criminal investigations, absurd at the highest level. And we can anticipate then the battle is coming between these House committees and others who might request for investigated materials violative of the Constitution, violative of our laws, and violative of the tradition that has animated our nation for well over two centuries. Let's talk in our remaining moments in this segment and then into the last about another entity that's also there on Capitol Hill. We've talked about a lot this in the past, and that is the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Some significant things happening just in these past weeks coming out of the United States Supreme Court as well. A couple of issues from last week, one from this week related to some investigative journalism was just conducted. We have talked a lot about the fact that there have been about 52 or so cases. The United States Supreme Court has already decided it's going to address and resolve the oral arguments of this past fall on many of them, everything from voting rights to gerrymandering to health care to environmental issues, all sorts of things out there that they're taking on. More oral arguments coming up in the weeks and months ahead, anticipating decisions on major issues coming up probably in May and June. Significant thing happened about 10 days or so ago, and that is that the Supreme Court issued, somewhat late in terms of how it normally does this, the first of its opinions, the first ruling of its 9-month, or actually 12-month term, that started back in October, a little bit more than a month behind its normal schedule. Usually it starts to issue some opinions in some of the less publicly attentive cases. And sure enough, just this past week or 10 days or so, the United States Supreme Court, in a majority opinion written by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, ruled unanimously against a Navy veteran named Adolfo Arellano. It's a technical but important dispute about his disability claim that was dismissed by a lower court concerning whether or not he had filed this in a timely fashion. And the court, in the end, unanimously found that he was not eligible for those retroactive disability benefits after he had missed a one-year application window. And so that coming out of the Supreme Court, the first of its major decisions this past week, we're going to anticipate more of those in the future. But after this final break, we're also going to talk about something else coming out of the Supreme Court. Stay with us.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A winter weather advisory continues until 3 a.m. early tomorrow morning. Overcast skies this afternoon with snow showers likely. Highs around 21. Northeast winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Snow showers likely at times tonight, 15. Chance for snow showers tomorrow, 20. 4 to 8 inches of snow today through tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 16 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back for our final segment here at Morning Cannolis. Thank you so much, all callers who've called in to Calvin and me to talk about just these important issues on our national agenda. Right before the break, we were talking about the United States Supreme Court once again having issued its first significant opinion of this term. A little bit late, normally it does that in November, December. First opinion having to do with the right of a veteran to apply for disability benefits outside of the statutory ambit, the requirement for him to do so, finding that, unfortunately, his case needed to be dismissed because of its untimeliness. We will look forward to more decisions like that. That is, cases where the Supreme Court is addressing important issues, procedural in that case, but also substantive. A lot of attention plainly going to be paid in May and June as the Supreme Court issues some of its major decisions. And speaking about major decisions, we have also spoken at great length about the Dobbs decision of last June that, as you all know well, overruled a nearly 50-year precedent of the United States Supreme Court, that in Roe versus Wade, establishing that there was indeed a privacy right for women and for all Americans under the Constitution, a privacy right to abortion based upon somewhat of a sliding scale, based upon the viability of the fetus, but nonetheless affirming inside the Constitution that privacy right exists. Finding in Dobbs, this opinion written by Justice Alito, joined in by the other conservatives on the bench, that Roe versus Wade had been wrongly decided, rejecting that notion that there was a privacy right and sending the issue back to the court, the states, as you've seen, and yes, indeed, some courts as well, to determine what this means in the wake of that. Well, in the wake of that decision, and even before that decision, we know that there was a leak of the draft of the Alito opinion. We know as well that the Chief Justice commissioned the internal investigation of this, the court martial, to investigate this. And we recall, well, just last week that she came forward and said, we can't figure out who leaked that opinion, which is, as I've said before, a stunning result given the ways in which criminal investigations, civil investigations can be conducted in this nation in 2023 and beyond. Indicated that she'll continue to look at this situation, but cannot find the culprit. Some interesting statements about the extent to which the Supreme Court justices themselves were actually interviewed. The principal investigator said that she had some iterative discussions with some Supreme Court justices, and they asked her questions as well. But during the course of that disclosure, an awful lot of questions, again, about the legitimacy of that finding, the extent to which it can be relied upon, and the disappointment I would offer that all Americans should have, frankly, that all members of the Supreme Court should have in not identifying who it was who did this. As I've said before, not a crime to disclose this, but arguably now a crime because somebody who did that presumably has lied to this investigator, and that is a crime. So huge problems here. It gets worse this past week. It gets even more troubling because, as you also remember, there's a fellow named Michael Chertoff. Michael Chertoff, formerly of the Department of Justice, a high-ranking member under prior administrations, also a prior Secretary of Homeland Security, and so someone with credibility, who is now in the private sector, which is the point of this report. The Chief Justice called him in to look at the results of this report, and Michael Chertoff, almost contemporaneous with its issuance, said, yes, I've taken a look at this. This report has legitimacy. This was done well, and regrettably, its result
is one that we have to live with effectively, and the results of it are based upon illegitimate, properly conducted investigation. Again, disappointing to many of us, including me, disappointing in terms of just not identifying, again, the culprit, if you will, who did this, goes to the integrity of the court, breaks tradition, breaks the fundamental sense of trust, not because there's a criminal violation here in that act, but because it undermines the ways in which the Supreme Court operates and does its business. What is the significant news that came out this week about Michael Chertoff? And that is, coming out of some good investigative reporting, we find out just this past week that the Supreme Court, presumably through the Chief Justice and the other justices, did not disclose that it has a long-standing financial tie with former Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff when it touted him as this expert that put his imprimatur on this failed report, this failed investigation, validating that investigation. The court's inquiry, which again was released the previous week with Chertoff's endorsement, failed to identify who is responsible for that unprecedented leak. And this past week, we learn that the very person who gave his support to, who justified the legitimacy of that, has had a longstanding financial relationship while he is in a private sector with the court. What is this all about? Well, specifically, there are some estimated payments to Michael Chertoff's risk assessment firm. He's got a private firm in Washington. What does he do? He does consultations that extended over several months and involved a review of the justices' homes. And that investigation, the cost of that, reached about $1 million. The exact amount of money could not be determined. Supreme Court contracts, and this is also a significant part of this news story breaking this past week, are not covered by federal public disclosure rules and so elude or avoid tracking on public database bases. Many people looking at this and saying, gosh, Michael Chertoff certainly has the capacity to acquire or get monies from the court for providing this service about justices' homes and the security issues. But when it comes to official business of the court, the notion that he would then put his imprimatur on the legitimacy of this report is plainly a conflict of interest, plainly the kind of thing that Americans should expect better from. Many people at least asking the valid question about why the Supreme Court went to someone with whom they already had this financial relationship existing. What can be sure about what his objective is and was? That's part of the reason for disclosures of a proper nature. It underscores once again the commission that we've talked about before that the Supreme Court justice has this day and in the past and certainly in the future to clean up ethics matters when it comes to the conduct of the Supreme Court. The fact that there is not a public disclosure requirement under the rules and regulations of the Supreme Court prevents us from knowing all about this and prevents us from understanding how the Supreme Court works, hopefully, but perhaps not, in a nonpartisan, nonpolitical, and non-biased way. That's the concern about this report. We also know that the Supreme Court does not abide by the rules that apply to other federal judges at the district court level, at the circuit court level, an awful lot of focus upon Clarence Thomas, the involvement of his wife in decisions that also implicate the rulings of the Supreme Court themselves. And this notion that Clarence Thomas has not recused himself in those cases. Lots of things coming out of the Supreme Court that need to be addressed in terms of fundamental ethics. We will continue to talk about the United States Supreme Court. We'll continue to talk about January 6th, other matters related to justice and law and government. We will continue as we think today about the death of Tyre Nichols in Memphis as we go forward in attempting as best we can to enforce justice, to be meaningful to the lives of all Americans in the United States of America. Join us again next week. Thank you for joining me today. Have a good week, everybody.
One more time again now. Thought I'd see you one more time again. There's just a few things coming my way this time around now. Thought I'd see you.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.